It's the money.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Kuttner, who is the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. He was formerly an assistant to the legendary I.F. Stone, a chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee, and for 20 years wrote a column for Business Week. Robert Kuttner is the author of 8 books, including his latest, A Presidency in Peril, The Insider Story of Obama's Promise, Wall Street's Power, and The Struggle to Control Our Economic Future. And he has an article at the Huffington Post, Let's Not Make a Deal. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Kuttner.
Thanks so much, Ian.
And in not making a deal, of course, you're referring to the so-called fiscal cliff, which in itself is a piece of sort of right-wing framing, if you will, in the sense that it's a part of, feels like a part of Pete Peterson's The Sky is Falling. It has a kind of apocalyptic feel to it that we're going to go off a cliff. My understanding is that, you know, it's no big deal in as much as if the president does nothing, the onus is going to be on the Republicans. So why all the hysteria?
Well, let's separate the substance from the tactics. Substantively, $607 billion worth of automatic cuts are due to kick in the first of the year because of the expiration of the Bush tax cuts and the expiration of the temporary cut in the Social Security payroll tax, and then you've got this automatic sequester deal that the Republicans hung around the president's neck in 2011 as the price for extending the debt ceiling. So it would not be good if that happened. That's the substance. The tactical situation is what you say it is. The president holds all the cards because he and his party just won the election. And the Republicans kind of have to come to him, and the business community is terrified that if this fiscal cliff were to go off, it would be a big contraction in the economy. So Obama has a lot of power right now if he chooses to use it in a good way. And I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised by Obama's recent press conference today, where he basically said that he's not going to give in on the issue of the top 2% not getting a continuation of the Bush tax breaks. Also, at a meeting with labor leaders yesterday, he said he's going to be looking for another $600 billion in other tax increases on rich people, and he wants to get as much deficit reduction as he can by increasing taxes on the wealthy without cutting into programs. So far, so good. The problem is that Obama buys the premise that we need a lot of deficit reduction, and that's where I think he's off base. He committed during the campaign and before the campaign to $4 trillion of deficit reduction over 10 years. And the point I keep making is that if a so-called fiscal cliff of $600 billion in 1 year is bad, an Obama cliff of $4 trillion over 10 years is almost as bad. So we don't need those deficit cuts. If anything, we need increased deficit spending in the short run because of Hurricane Sandy and the threats to our coasts and the need to invest in clean energy. So I do think the president is rather tougher than I would have feared, and I hope that he'll go the rest of the way and realize that not only do we need to not have cuts in Social Security and Medicare, but to get whatever deficit reduction we need by raising taxes on wealthy people, but not to do deficit reduction at all, at least for the first 2 or 3 years while the economy is still weak.
So, Robert Kuttner, obviously everything goes back to those dealings in July of 2011. And one of the alarming things about the deal that was ultimately scuttled by the Tea Party caucus was that what Obama apparently put on the table was pretty scary in terms of eviscerating the very legacy of the Democratic Party. So if you've already put Social Security and Medicare on the table, aren't the Republicans going to say, treated as though that's already a precedent?
Well, that's a wonderfully interesting question. Obama seemed to be saying, that question came up at his press conference today, he seemed to be saying, well, back then I put it on the table, but I'm going to take it off the table because we just won the election. We just had an election over whether the American people want Social Security and Medicare to be cut. We just had an election over whether they want rich people to pay higher taxes, and I won. And so I don't think he is in a mood to give away as much as he almost gave away in 2011. So in a sense, the Tea Party saved him from himself. He's now, you know, picked up seats in the Senate. He's picked up a few seats in the House. And he's feeling feisty. I mean, I think the Obama that we saw in the days right after the election is a somewhat tougher Obama than we saw during a lot of his first term, and we'll have to keep the pressure on him and see how this plays out. But so far, as one who's been very critical of my president, I have to say that I'm pleasantly surprised. It ain't over, and he could still cave in, but it's better than I would have feared.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Kuttner, who is the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. He was formerly an assistant to the legendary I.F. Stone, a chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee, and for 20 years wrote a column for Business Week. Robert Kuttner is the author of 8 books, including his latest, A Presidency in Peril, The Insider Story of Obama's Promise, Wall Street's Power, and The Struggle to Control Our Economic Future. He also has an article at the Huffington Post, Let's Not Make a Deal. So, just a broader question, though, about the political DNA, if you will, of our Democratic presidents. They've both Clinton and Obama have said that they were influenced in many ways by President Reagan. They came of age in the Reagan era. What I find extraordinary is that the country has moved so far to the right, and the Republican Party has moved so far to the right that even Republicans now are saying, are starting to complain about Limbaugh and the crazies. But the Democratic Party also moved to the right. It looks like from this last election that the American people moved a little bit back the other way to the left. So I'm worried that we may have a purple president in a blue America. And I'm wondering whether they realize that the Reagan era is over.
Well, I don't think the American people ever moved that far to the right because Social Security and Medicare never ceased to be popular. The idea that the wealthy ought to pay their fair share never ceased to be good politics. And so I think the Democratic Party has been somewhat behind the people. And the fact that, you know, the Democrats picked up seats in the Senate, and for the most part, the seats they picked up are progressives replacing conservatives or progressives replacing centrists. That means that the congressional party is a bit more progressive than it used to be. And Obama now, not having to run for re-election again, starting to worry about his legacy, I don't think he wants his legacy to be 4 more years of a recession. So, you know, if we can figure out a way to have a movement to keep the pressure on, we may see a moderately more progressive Obama. I don't want to count my chickens yet. You're absolutely right that the last 2 Democratic presidents, really the last 3 Democratic presidents, counting Jimmy Carter, have been very centrist, even center-right. Wall Street has had much too much influence. It still does. He raised a ton of money on Wall Street. So, you know, it's going to be a long road back. But I think the fact that he's hanging tough on who should get a tax increase, he seems to be in a better place than he was in 2011 in terms of giving away the store on Social Security and Medicare. I'm still worried that he has bought into this idea that Pete Peterson and company are pushing, that the way to get a recovery going is to reduce the deficit, when it's just the opposite. The way to get a recovery going in a weak economy is to have more public investment, more investment in jobs, more investment in infrastructure. But I think tactically the Republicans are in a much weaker position than they were 2 years ago, and I think Obama knows that.
Well, Pete Peterson, who you mentioned, Robert Kuttner, he paid the salaries, I believe, for the Simpson-Bowles Commission.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, Clinton even mentioned, President Clinton even mentioned that at the Democratic Convention as a kind of worthy template to follow.
Yeah.
So
Bowles Simpson was one of the worst things Obama ever did because, number one, it was bad policy what the Bowles Simpson Commission or Simpson-Bowles Commission was supporting. But, number two, tactically, it painted Obama into a corner where he appointed these guys. These guys come up with the idea of a grand bargain to cut the deficit by cutting Social Security and Medicare and raising taxes. And then Obama's in the position of having to either deliver or to disown his own commission. So we've got a lot of ground to make up before we get a Democratic Party that is as progressive as the country is.
So how did this deficit Kool-Aid get taken so seriously and to have this president and his Democratic predecessor, Bill Clinton, drink the Kool-Aid? And it's so obvious, well, at least it's obvious to me, that Pete Peterson, being a Wall Street billionaire, may not have the interests of working Americans at heart,
right.
And he may just want to get his hands on, and Wall Street may want to get their hands on all this money. After all, remember when George W. Bush got reelected, he went to the public and said, I've got some political capital and I'm going to spend it. And what did he spend it on? Trying to privatize Social Security.
Right. Well, Peterson's been at this for 30 years. Bob Rubin has been pushing this for 30 years. I mean, Rubin started out as a Democratic fundraiser back when he was co-chair of Goldman Sachs, and he cozied up to Walter Mondale, persuaded Mondale that the single most important thing Mondale needed to do was promise to raise taxes and cut the deficit, and Mondale lost 49 states when he took that advice when he ran for president in 84. And so I think Rubinism has infected the Democratic Party. I think Peterson has now spent $500 million on propaganda to the effect that the single most important thing we need to do is cut the deficit. And the problem is the press, a lot of the mainstream press, has bought this idea that the deficit is an emblem of the fact that the two parties won't work together rather than the reality that it's the result of Republican obstructionism. And so the deficit is taken as a kind of totem of good government. And the Fix the Debt campaign, which is 100 corporate CEOs, telling America to tighten its belt for the greater good, even though these guys are fatter than ever. You know, a lot of people have drunk the Kool-Aid, including a lot of centrist Democrats, the Washington Post, the mainstream media, and it's just bad economics. And, you know, the fact that Obama has backed off a little bit from it is a good sign, but we got a lot of work to do.
Well, surely, Robert Kuttner, a sign of the sort of economic absurdity of this deficit obsession from these deficit hawks is the fact that foreigners can't wait to put their money in this country. Nobody thinks it's going to go broke, do they?
Well, it's even more extreme than that. I mean, the federal government has never been able to borrow money at a lower interest rate. You know, when Reagan was president and Reagan had deficits of 3 or 4% of GDP, they were spending 16% of the total federal budget on interest costs. Now they're only spending 6% of the federal budget on interest costs because interest rates are so low. So now would be a great time for the federal government to borrow money, to underwrite infrastructure, to invest in job creation. I mean, the fact that the federal government can sell 30-year bonds at under 3% tells you that nobody takes seriously the idea that these deficits are going to create inflation, because if they were worried about that, nobody would lend the government money at that low an interest rate for 30 years. People are more worried about deflation. The banks are sitting on $1.5 trillion that they don't know where to invest because they don't see customers. So this is absolute Alice in Wonderland craziness, and it's just an indication of the power of corporate and financial elites, that this is the dominant narrative.
Well, Robert Kuttner, I thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Cutton, who's the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. He was formerly an assistant to the legendary I.F. Stone, a chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee, and for 20 years wrote a column for Business Week. Robert Cutton is the author of 8 books, including his latest, A Presidency in Peril, The Insider Story of Obama's Promise, Wall Street's Power, and the Struggle to Control Our Economic Future. And he has an article at the Huffington Post, Let's Not Make a Deal. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about alternative economic solutions to empower Americans at the local level.
What's my station? Oh, just tell me what I should do. I don't need to be kind to the armies of night that would do such injustice to you. Or bow down and be grateful and say, should take all that you see to